I'm here speaking with Joe Farias, who is a candidate for state representative in State House District 118 in San Antonio. This is an open seat that was vacated by Carlos Uresti after his successful run for Senate. Tell me about the district and what you believe the top issues are for it.
Well, the district is 67 square miles itself. It's 56% Democrat, and or 54% Democrat, and about 46 Republican. The district starts on the southern sector, where it was always a Democratic seat, and now with the redistricting lines, they've extended it all the way around to the north side of San Antonio. So they brought in a lot of the Republican base out in that area. And
This district obviously is one of the top targets for the Republican Party this year, but it's an open seat. It's relatively split partisan-wise. They've got a candidate who was a Hispanic gentleman named George Antonio, who used to work for Kay Bailey Hutchison. How do you see this race shaping up?
Well, in the primary, we did very well. There was four candidates, and we were able to win it outright without a runoff. We pulled almost 57% of the vote in the primary. The votes we got were there was three on the Republican side in the primary, and just the votes I got pulled out more than all three combined in the Republican primary. So we're hoping that the Democratic vote gets out. If they get out and vote, we're going to walk away with it. But we just got to get them out of the House to come vote.
Now, Mr. Antonio has been talking about illegal immigration and school vouchers. How do these issues play in the district, and what are your positions?
Well, as far as immigration is concerned, our community sees it as everybody else does. These people are coming across because they need jobs. They need something else besides what they have in their own country. And all our citizens are asking in our community, which is predominantly Hispanic in the area I live in, are saying, just pay your taxes, take care of your children, send them to school, and abide by the law. That's all we're asking. They're really concerned because of the walls that are already existing. There's people dying out in the Texas border because of the walks that they're going through. The people that are coming over are not terrorists, but the ones that are getting caught that are terrorists or suspected terrorists are coming through the Canadian border. I don't think the area in Texas could survive without some migrant workers, some immigrant workers. I mean, they're hired by people. I think a lot of times they're abused by the same people that are trying to keep them out. Or farmers and ranchers don't pay top salary for them. They're working for less than minimum wage out there in some areas, but yet they want to keep them out. So what's going to happen if all the migrant workers are kept out or sent back? 12 million people, where are we going to put them? Where are they going to go? One thing is to pass a law. The other thing is to police it and enforce it. We can have all the laws in the world. We have all the laws in the United States that we can write. But until we start enforcing and implementing the laws itself as they exist, we have laws in place already. We just need to implement what we have and enforce them.
Well, let's talk about school vouchers, since that's the other issue Mr. Antonio is speaking about. What's your position on it? And, let's relate this to the recent special session on education that the legislature went through. What do you think about it, and where do we go from here?
Well, when we speak of vouchers, people really don't realize what an impact it has on a public school system. In our school district, for every child that we lose out of our school district going to voucher or going to a charter school or anywhere else outside of public education, we lose over $5,000 per student. In the past years, we lost approximately 200. We believe that they went to either charter schools or vouchers, but they left Harlandale. They just didn't move away. Their families, we know, we tracked them. They still live in the community. So at 5,000 times 200 is about $1 million, maybe a little bit. It's over $1 million because it's $5,265 that we lose. So we lost over $1 million come out of our budget to fund our public education. Now the state comes in and they pass this large, big tax increase to businesses, and the only ones that benefit are the businesses themselves. They benefit because, one, they won't implement them to 2008. So we lose the revenues from that for 1 year. And they didn't put any money in public education. None at all. My opponent says that he's for school choice, trying to find another word to say vouchers. And you can't get away from it. You know, we quack like a duck, walk like a duck, looks like a duck, it's a duck, it's vouchers. And he's out there telling people that that he's for public education now all of a sudden. But we all know that once he gets in, he's going to be with the Republican Party. And the reason I'm saying that is because he goes around and tells people that his leadership skills are he learned them from Rick Perry, who he worked for, and Kay Bailey Hutchinson. They're very extremely conservative. We all know what Rick Perry had done in the Republican leadership in Austin in the last few. I was there. I heard the debates. And we read them. There's too much testing. We're testing our kids. I have a 3-year-old granddaughter who comes home crying because of the pressure that are put on her. And why would we have a third grader come home crying because she's worried about the test? And she's a very smart young lady. I believe she scored in the 98% and 100%, some of them. But she still worries about them. No matter how smart you are, the pressure is there. We're putting pressure on kids that is totally uncalled for. And that's come from No Child Left Behind. It's put burdens on school districts.
Okay. What do you foresee the 2007 legislature needing to do to make up for the projected shortfalls in revenue to pay for the property tax reductions that they passed this time around?
Well, I do believe that Governor Perry has already sent out a memo stating that agencies are to cut 10% from their funding. They're going to attempt to cut even more on that. And I believe we need to find other avenues. I think we need to streamline our government and how we spend our money, but not at the expense of our community, of our elderly, of our children, health services for children. But that's where they're going to go. I do believe there's areas that we can look at, and my first goal is to get in there and visit with other fellow representatives and identify where we need to go with it.
What is your background, professional and political, and what do you believe are the strongest skills that you bring to this race and to the job of state representative if you're elected?
Well, one of the things is that, you know, my party stands for the working folk, the middle class working person. My whole career, my whole life started at a pin setter setting pins at a bowling alley in a Brooks Air Force Base in San Antonio at the age of 12. And I had worked all my life. At the age of 14, I was setting irrigation pipe along the river when they were expanding the San Antonio River. I worked all my way through high school. I joined the military at the age of 20. I was sitting in Vietnam at the age of 21. In Berlin by the age of 22. I started as a helper, as a machinist helper, a grunt, a fetcher, whatever they want to call it. And I worked my way up through the ranks with just an associate's degree. In 1990, I was asked to start or implement a training program within the City Public Service where I'm retired from, because we were getting young people with very poor skills, whether mechanical or mathematical skills, and they wanted me to establish a training program and be the first one to go in and set the roots for this training program. So I became a trainer in 1990, training and development. I developed our own training programs in-house that currently still exist at City Public Service. In 2000, I was asked to go into an area of human resource in dealing with employee development, employee behavior, coaching and supervising supervisors and how to deal with issues. So I went there and I got promoted and I went there and I worked in human resource. Because our power plants have such a large disconnect from the main office that they wanted somebody in the field with a background so the employees could relate to the whoever was in charge of this. Well, in 2000, they brought together the operations training and technical training area, and I was selected to supervise that. So I was from a helper, I went to supervising the trainers and developers at City Public Service after 32 years I retired. But I ended up being a a supervisor overseeing our training and development, and also doing still the human resource part.
Okay. Any last thing you want to say about yourself or the race?
Well, I do believe that my family is working very hard at this. I have four sons and a wonderful wife, 35 years. And I shared this with some people that we will not leave a stone unturned and will not quit working till November the 7th at 7 o'clock when the polls close. And this seat will remain a Democratic seat if it is God's wishes, because I am going to work till the end to keep it a Democratic seat where it should be and not sell it out or have it bought out, may I say, by the Republican Party.
Joe Farias, thank you very much. Good luck with your race.
Thank you.